to another exciting episode of the League of Mediocre Gentlemen. I am your host slash producer, Richard Martindale, and with me, as always, is Patrick Weaver.
So you say "as always" a lot, and then I think our next episode, I'm not going to be on it because it's the anime episode, right? Oh, spoilers!
Oh, spoilers indeed. Yes, well, that's also it's also true because Ian is not always on this episode, as he is not here today. So I just like to be optimistic and always assume that you're here, at least in spirit.
But, so I'm gonna take this recording moment to just kind of out loud say that my dog is very clearly eating something that she wants me to chase after her for, and I'm hoping that my wife is hearing me yell about this.
there was no answer.
There's no. She's dead. She'll be dead soon.
All right, anyway. Pat. Today we are talking about video games. Last week we did mostly baseball stuff. I talked briefly about anger, which touched on a video game. But mostly it was baseball fantasy stuff. This week we're going to be doing just video games, specifically Switch video games, because you know E3 happened just recently, which got us all kind of excited about what's coming out, which also means that since nothing's coming out right now, what is out? And so examining a bunch of games that you've been recently playing on the Switch. And so it's going to be pretty exciting to talk about all that stuff with you, because I'm curious about some of the stuff that, hilariously, I've recommended to you but not have actually played myself. But first, I kind of wanted to talk briefly about a game that I just recently played that is also actually is on the Switch as well, and that's the game Undertale.
So this game is like, it's like Minecraft, right?
No, it's more, it's sort of like Earthbound is the best comp to it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, in fact, the guy who made it, Toby Fox, actually said that Earthbound was one of the primary influences he had when he made this game. I also kind of get a Chrono Trigger vibe from it, even though I don't think he quoted that as something. But it's like any of those old Square Enix, or I guess it was just Squaresoft, kind of a games back in the day. That's kind of what Undertale is. It's really low bit graphics, but has that RPG kind of styling to it.
Cool.
So there's different ways you can play it. You could play it there's a morality system, and I don't want to give too spoilery in case you actually want to play it yourself. But you can do, there's morals in it, and you could play the whole game without killing anyone. The pacifist route, as it's called. You can play the whole game killing everyone, the genocide route. And then there's a neutral one. People will probably tell you that there's other endings, but there's really only three, and then the rest of those three kind of get subdivided into maybe one line of dialogue changes or something like that.
Interesting. Okay.
But it's pretty good. If I had to sum it up, though, there is a scene from Men in Black that I want to play real quick for you. And this basically sums up how I felt by the end of completing the true ending pacifist route.
What the hell happened?
Hesitated.
May I ask why you felt little Tiffany deserved to die?
Well, she was the only one that actually seemed dangerous at the time, sir.
How'd you come to that conclusion?
Well, first I was going to pop this guy hanging from the streetlight, and then I realized, you know, he's just working out. I mean, how would I feel if somebody come running in the gym busting my ass while I'm on a treadmill? Then I saw this snarling beast guy, and I noticed he had a tissue in his hand. I realized, you know, he's not snarling. He's sneezing. You know, ain't no real threat there. Then I saw little Tiffany, thinking, you know, 8-year-old white girl, middle of the ghetto, bunch of monsters, this time of night with quantum physics books. She about to start some shit, Zed. She's about 8 years old. Those books are way too advanced for her. Yeah, she's up to something. And to be honest, I'd appreciate it if you eased up off my back about it. Or do I owe her an apology?
So there you go. So that's basically, the idea in this is, you have to kind of find clues as you're doing battles to find out, you know, do you actually want to, a kill or attack somebody?
The basis of that scene, though, I mean, it's comedy.
Right, yes.
But he's really piecing together really shoddy logic for a decision that he made.
Yes.
So is that how the morality system comes together in Undertale?
It's not in that sort of a broad sense of like this is him, like this is you, like trying to, you know, pass off a terrible decision or your ability. But it's more of it's literally that kind of a comedy scene where like where it very much is like, oh, he's like, if you wanted to think that Jay was a perceptive, like, shooter and that he realized that these guys are not bad guys, even though they, on first scene, they look like it. That's a lot of what this game kind of tries to do with you. And it does it really effectively, too. But there's a lot of really funny dialogue. There's a lot of really funny characters in it that kind of, like, you know, get you attached to some of these monsters and stuff. But so I did the pacifist route, and it's easy-ish. I mean, the gameplay is really wonky. It's a lot of, like, you're this little, like, icon in a box. It's a heart icon. And you basically have to avoid stuff that tries to hit you. And it's not the best controls. I mean, this game was made by, like, one guy. So you kind of have to expect that going in. It's not terrible controls. It's just, like, I'm just not good at this is the feeling I got. And then there are moments where the game is like, I realize you're not good at this. And I'm not going to let you win anyway. Like, I don't think I could have avoided that one. And I felt like I lost, I don't know, agency. Mm-hmm. The thing that's interesting is, so, like, there's a character in this game. And based on how you have reached this point in the game, slight spoilers for people, but, I mean, it's not too spoilery. This is a vacuum. So there's this character that could become your friend if you are in pacifist route. But if you are in the genocide route and you've killed everyone up to this point, it's like this knight armor thing that hounds you in either route. And so, like, you try to kill this, like, little dinosaur kid, and this knight, like, jumps in front of it and takes the hit. At this point, like, the knight's helmet's, like, torn off, and it's revealed to be this woman in this thing, and she's, like, tells the kid to get out of here. And she's like, I'll be all right. But she reveals that she's gotten, like, one-shotted, basically. Through sheer determination, she, like, basically, like, pulls on and she's like, no, I can't stop now. If I stop now, you'll head into the rest and kill everyone else. Like, this is it. This is the moment where I have to stop you here. And so all of a sudden it turns into this really epic boss fight against this girl. And this, like, music starts playing. And it's really, like, epic music. And I wanted to kind of play the little sample of it right now. And so this music's going on, and it's, like, really, 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 like, powerful-sounding music of, like, oh, man, like as a player, I'm like, yeah, this is sweet. But you don't, like, all of a sudden it hit me. I was like, oh, man, this music isn't for me. This is for the girl. Like, this is her music. And the title of the music is Battle Against a True Hero. And it's not you that the music is, like, trying to celebrate. It's, like, this person who's literally, like, trying to hold the line against a person who has been, like, massacring monsters all the way to this point. And when I realized that, I was like, holy crap, like, this fight is actually really effective at flipping the way you normally see games or whatever on its head, in terms of you being the protagonist. And all of a sudden, I mean, technically you're still the protagonist, but, like, you being, like, in, you know, when you play, like, a Fable game or, like, Mass Effect or something, you always sort of, like, you do a bad thing and your friends are like, well, that sucked, but I guess we got what we wanted, but don't do that again. And so in this one, it very much turns them all against you. And it's at this point, like, it's really cool to hear this, like, oh, you could, like, it's a really hard boss fight too. But it's cool to hear that, like, this game is not trying to cheer you on. It's cheering its own NPCs on. So, right. I thought it was cool. There's a lot of nice twists and turns along the way, and it's got some of the best dialogue. And honestly, I have to say that I think the neutral route is the worst route of the three. It's just, it just feels so incomplete compared to what the genocide and the pacifist route do. But the neutral route's there to kind of like give you a taste. And then the game does something really smart at the end where, like, if you screwed up and you have just the neutral, it says, hey, if you want, you know, you almost got to this thing. All you got to do, if only you had done like, this one little thing. And so it lets you go back before the final like boss fight, and you can go and finish up your business and then go back and do the true ending if you want. And I thought that was nice. It was a cool little like, oh good, I don't have to play the whole thing, I can just real quick tweak something and then get this. So I did not expect to start liking this game because it did a whole lot of like subversions of the genre sort of shtick. It came out, I think, a year before Doki Doki Literature Club. And if I had played this then, when I hit Doki Doki Literature Club, I would have been like, oh man, it's just doing Undertale. And instead, now I'm like, when I'm playing Undertale, like, some of the twists come in and I go, oh, it's doing that thing again that Doki Doki did. And I was like, well, that's not fair. This came out first. But that's the feeling I got, was like, oh, but it's still, it does it different enough and more thorough, I think. Plus, cause there's actual gameplay and there's actual, like, a little bit more depth. Like, I think a JRPG is less limiting than what a visual novel looking thing is, that Doki Doki was. So I think Undertale could flesh out what Doki was trying to kind of do.
Nice.
But yeah, so I recommend it. It's literally like an 8 to 10 hour game. 12 if you do the genocide run as well as the pacifist, because I think the pacifist clocks in about 8 to 10 hours. Genocide can be about 2 to 3 hours, depending on how good you are at certain of these mechanics. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got it for like, I think it was on the Christmas sale and on Steam, and I got it for like $5. It's on Switch. I think it might be on everything at this point, because it's a super like simple game to probably mod and stuff. So yeah, I just wanted to say that real quick. That was a game I just recently played and completed literally like a day or two ago. So
yeah, so that was a really good review. I do have two questions.
Okay.
From a guy who's never played this.
Good.
So first, do you? You said that you kind of compared it a little bit to Doki Doki, but in my opinion, Earthbound and Doki Doki are like literally polar opposites.
Oh yeah, yeah. Gameplay wise, it looks like a lesser pixeled. Well, it looks like Earthbound. It looks and controls a lot like Earthbound does. You've got random encounters. You're walking around the world.
Right.
It's got really smart. Snappy dialogue about, like, you know, being self-aware sometimes and just being a little cheeky and pop culture-y at certain points, similar to Earthbound. Mm-hmm. The reason I compared it to Doki Doki was because Doki Doki did the whole Monica thing, and Undertale attempts to do something similar-ish in this, like, I see that you think you're the player and you have the ability to change things. Well, I'm going to throw that on its head and make you kind of doubt everything you've had up to this point. That's the reason. It has a reveal that feels very Doki Doki Literature Club-like,
gotcha,
without being exactly the same. Like, it just does it a little... It does it different enough and longer and more thorough that it just sort of, like it was sort of like a punch and then a second punch comes in, where Doki Doki literally just had the one trick. And then after that, it was sort of like, this game is... Pretty much that's all you got left. You couldn't really... Like, it doesn't matter which girl you quote-unquote romance in Doki Doki, the end's going to be the same.
Mm-hmm.
In Undertale, it very much... The end will change dramatically depending on what you do during the game. So so that's the reason it's a little different, but has something of a similar thing to it. So that's why I compared the two. Three.
Cool. Okay, that makes sense. Second, you said that it was depending on the pass you take and everything, anywhere from 2 to 10 hours of gameplay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
So how much was it?
$5. I think it's like
$5. Okay, not bad.
I think it's normally about $10. I think I got it on sale for like 50% off. But yeah,
Nice.
Pretty darn cheap for the amount of stuff. And I haven't even, like, I looked up Genocide Run. I didn't actually do it myself because there is a boss fight in there that has been known as literally the hardest boss fight in the game. And it's in that route. It's not even the final one. And it's like, I watched that happen. Yeah, it's normally $10. Right now it's on sale on Steam for $4. So,
nice.
But I watched that one because I was playing it and a friend was watching me play it. And she was like, no, you need to see what you almost had to do if you'd screwed this up. And I was watching this guy do it, and I don't know how he was dodging some of the stuff, but, like, it comes out, and the character, like, just shoots out all these, like, beams, and these bones starts flying all over the place, and he, like, they always talk during these fights. He goes, yeah, I don't know why people don't, like, start off with their strongest attack first. And, like, and it just goes from there into, like, more ridiculousness. It's a really hard-looking fight, and I was like, I don't think I'll ever be able to do genocide. Like, that is... I could barely do some of these stupid enemies in here. What makes you think I can do this? I recommend it. It's probably $10 on Switch. Does Nintendo Switch just have, like, sales or anything on there? Like, on their eStore?
Oh, yeah. They have sales. I mean, they usually don't have sales on their first-party products.
Right. But, like, this is a third-party one, so... Yeah, so if you're ever in the mood for trying out something, I highly recommend it. It's really goofy, fun, and will make you laugh. That's my take on Undertale.
Nice, that's really great. Honestly, I don't know if I'll check it out, but
I mean, I had it literally in my library for like 5 months, and I still didn't play it until literally yesterday.
For $5, though, I mean, you can't really go wrong.
True. Yeah.
And that actually brings up another interesting point, and I'm gonna talk about this when we talk a little bit about my games.
Okay.
But there definitely is a bit of a mental game that I have to get over when buying some of these games, because traditionally I never really was an indie game person or anything like that. Like, I just
same
always
here.
Buy
yep.
All these AAA titles, like highly polished, and the idea is that because you're paying full price, like $60, $100, whatever,
right?
You're not only expecting perfection, but you're being hypercritical of things that might be going wrong.
Right.
Well, then you go and you only spend like $10 or $15 on such and such indie game. And it gives you so much enjoyment, but it's really hard to get away from that hypercritical aspect. And
yes.
And I actually don't want this to be a segue into Reverie, like, even though it's kind of becoming that, but like,
sweet.
Especially in like Reverie, but also in Moonlighter a little bit, like,
yeah, you can see the unpolishedness on the edges,
right? Like, there's just some decisions they made that were just not really that great, like some bugs that at times would be a little game breaking, stuff like that, and you're just like, man, I can't believe that. It's really frustrating. I don't like this, blah, 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 blah. But then you got to take a step back, take a deep breath, and be like, well, I only paid $10 for this game.
Yep.
You know? And this would be unacceptable if this was $60.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But it wasn't. And so, and once I do that, like, I just find myself enjoying it so much more.
Yeah, so last thing on Undertale is, and I don't like to say this as my reason for... oh, you should get this. It's but it is like in the top 25 of best PC games of all time right now, mm-hmm. based on all the reviews that have pushed it up. At the very least, it's in good company with actually haven't looked up this, but I was listening to like a Kane and Rince podcast about this today because I was like, I wonder if they did Undertale, and sure enough, they did Undertale. So the thing about like, I had the same thought, and it wasn't for an indie game, but it was for Blizzard's Overwatch. And when I got Overwatch, I didn't buy, like, the $60 version. I bought the $40 one, because I didn't want to pay for skins. I was like, I'm not, I just, like, that's all you're basically getting. You're getting that, like, $60, for $20 more, you get, like, skins, and you get, like, all this, like, custom stuff. And I was like, I don't care enough to get that.
Right.
But as I played it, I'm like, oh, there's no story. There's no anything. It's just this multiplayer mode. And I got really upset with it. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, this is what, like, what? And, like, as I started to, like, think about it, then I'm like, okay, I only paid $40 for it.
Right.
Is this a bad $60 game? For sure. I think that anyone who paid $60 for Overwatch got ripped off. But for $40, and it's really hard to get down to $40 because I'm like, ugh. It's still like a weird number, but I was like, you know, I just bought Firewatch for $20, which is kind of aesthetically similar. Like, and that's only a story game. With, so I'm like, you know, in the last, like, in the same week, I have Firewatch here, it's my story, and I have a game that I can just play the multiplayer for, kind of equals out the $60, and I was like, okay, this isn't a bad value if I think about it this way, it's just, like, I'm not used to thinking of it this way. So, I kind of get you, but, you know.
Yeah, no, I'm totally on the same page. And it's kind of the same thing with Destiny now, because I can't remember how much it is. It's like $39 or something like that. Like, they did this package where you can get all of the Destiny 2 content up thus far, not including the new expansion in the fall, but like all the content thus far for like a low price.
Right.
And I mean, I get all the crap that Destiny 2's gotten, and that. That's not on the list today, I don't think, but it's something I want to mention if we have time.
Well, we might get to it.
Like, for $30 or however much they're charging for it, I mean, there's a lot of fun to be had for that price. So anything more about Undertale?
No, that's pretty much it. I was going to try to see if I could look up the actual, like, the best all-time PC games, but I don't know. It's not letting me do it by any other year. It's just 2019, so that will be something I would have to look up more. So anyway, no, I'm going on Undertale. Let's start with your games on the Switch.
All right, so I've actually really gotten back into games overall. Like, I spent quite a bit of time in my early late training not really playing many games. Like, and if I was playing a game, it was just X-Plane and doing things that were probably more educational than gaming. And then as I've moved along and I've had a little bit more free time, I've started playing games again. And I actually traveled quite a bit as well for work in a 5-week period, and I bring my Switch along with me. And I kind of had a revitalization of not just games, but of Switch games. And I read this online much after the fact, but I realized that there pretty much is an indie renaissance going on the Switch.
Yes.
Not many people can explain, at least fully anyway. Because whenever you think of Nintendo and the Switch, you think of all their first-party games.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, Nintendo actually feels like they've had a drought for third-party games in the last, right. Like, their two consoles or whatever. At least a drought of good third-party games, I should say, I should clarify.
Right. And the thing is that, like, on the Switch, it's not, even in this renaissance, it's not even third party in the way that we usually say third party. It's like small time indie developers that just have found this niche market that's just going crazy for the Switch. And so it really has been a nice refreshing leaf to turn over. And I'll give you a lot of credit, Richard, because I do believe I asked you initially, because I was going on travel and I didn't want to lug my PlayStation with me because Brooke uses it while my wife uses it while I'm gone. And so I figured I'd bring my Switch and start cracking on things that I haven't played in a while. And
well, the Switch is like made for this, like traveling through like airports and stuff. That should have been their commercial instead of bringing it to parties.
I know, right? Like the whole idea that it can, you can play it while you're boarding an airplane, you know, sitting in your seat and everything, and then after you take off, you can put the tray down, and then you can take the joysticks off, and you know, just kind of set it up, so you don't have to like crane your neck or anything like that. It's just, I mean, it's so perfect. But anyway, I asked you for some recommendations, and you gave me a few.
Yep.
The first one that I bought was called Reverie, and it's the Sweet As edition.
Yeah, I really want to get this still.
So, it's a great game. It's like Zelda-esque, kinda.
Yeah, it's like Zelda meets Earthbound in a weird marriage.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good comparison.
Another Earthbound comparison.
It's set in it's set in New Zealand.
I did not know that.
Yep, it's set in New Zealand, and the studio that made it is a New Zealand studio.
Oh, okay.
And the idea is that, and I'm not going to give any spoilers for the plot, but the idea is that you, just like Zelda, you have to go to these different dungeons in order. And it's a puzzle-based thing, where you, and then you pick up items, and those items help you, items and weapons help you through those dungeons, and then and progress you through the game. And there's other collectibles, like there you collect these feathers that connect with native New Zealand birds. And the idea is if you collect all the feathers, then your mother will like make this cloak for you and stuff. And it's a nice little touch. Cool. So anyway, so the puzzles are not difficult. Like and that's really the first thing that jumps out at you about this game is that once you get the controls down, which doesn't take long, the game is not very difficult. And the main reason is because it honestly could punish you if it wanted to, but I feel like the developers intentionally made it so that it didn't want you to be punished. Because like, yeah, you gotta know how to dodge, and you gotta really kind of pick your points, and you know, have to know how to attack the enemies and stuff, but there's like so much health laying around in pretty much every room that even if you take a ton of damage because you're being lazy, like there's just health everywhere, and so it doesn't punish you for being lazy.
Okay.
Now,
unfortunately,
entire game, I want to say, I actually don't quite know, so if somebody's listening to this and they can call me out on this being just flatly wrong, but I think it took me about 8 hours, 8 to 10 hours to finish.
Okay.
And I was pretty thorough through the whole thing because I enjoyed it quite a bit. And there was only one puzzle that I just was completely stumped, and I had to look it up.
It just like ratcheted up the difficulty of the puzzles.
No, not really. I feel like it was pretty linear, and like I was happy with the progression. It's just there was a mechanic that I didn't know existed, essentially.
Oh.
And so I was just stuck in this room, and I was stuck in this room for a couple hours, and I was just like running around trying to figure this out, and I just flatly couldn't figure it out, and so I had to look it up. And once I looked it up, I'm like, wait a second, I didn't know those things could do that. And then from that point, it was you know, I figured it out and it was fine. But it was the only part of the game where I ever consulted any kind of guide or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, which for me is kind of a big deal because I'm a really big guide person. Like, I get pretty anal about finding collectibles and being able to do things, quote unquote, the right way.
Right, yeah. Sometimes I can get into that too. It depends on the game for me.
But I honestly felt no pressure to do that in this game, and until I got frustrated with that one puzzle, like that was really it, which was nice. There were a few bugs, like there was this one where like when you're swimming and stuff, it would kind of like drop you off the side of the map, and you would have to restart the game.
Ooh, that's not great.
But it didn't, like, you didn't lose any progress. It didn't really do anything. It was just like made you restart the like, you know, close the game and open it again.
Okay.
But otherwise, I mean, it was great. It was pretty bug free, and it was overall just a neat little experience for the price you pay.
Yeah. And how much was it on the Switch?
I think it was like $10. I should have been a little more prepared for the podcast. I can actually look it up right now.
It's fine. Yeah, I can't remember if it was 10 or 15. It seemed like it was in that ballpark. I think I'm thinking Moonlighter is the expensive one. That one's like $5, depending on what you get by it.
$12.99 is what it's listed as.
Yeah, just split the middle.
Yeah. One of these I got on sale, and I can't remember which one. That's why the prices are not helping me, because, like, you suggested them, and I think it was Reverie. Like, you suggested it, and one of them was on sale, and I was like, okay.
I'm sure if we go back through our Telegram conversations, that it would have revealed itself. But, cool. Well, I'm glad, like I saw Reverie one day, and I couldn't, like, it was on, like, a preview for Giant Bomb's like YouTube channel, and mm-hmm. they were playing it, and it was just gameplay, and mm-hmm. I looked at it and like, oh man, I'm loving the color, I love this world looking, it looks like Earthbound, like tell me more about this game. And as they're going through it, I was like, everything about this seems like exactly up my alley. And I looked up like, what's it for? Surely I can get on the Steam or whatever. Nah, it's just Switch. I'm like, you son of a bitch.
Right.
It's another one. Put it on the list for games I need to get once I get the Switch. So.
Yeah. Highly recommend it. Soundtrack is good.
Okay.
It's not like earth-shatteringly good, but it's good.
I'm glad. I'm glad that it kind of like at least holds up somewhat to the kind of preview that I saw of it. So.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So that's Reverie. Do you have any other questions about Reverie?
No, not really. What was your, I guess, what was, how was the dialogue in it with between characters and such? Like, was it traditional kind of like stuff, or did they have any, comedy or, anything like that?
Not really. It was, so it's a very singular driven game. So okay. There really isn't a whole lot of dialogue overall. Okay. Like, without giving too much away, essentially you're being tasked to go out and save the world.
Oh, okay. Spoilers.
And so,
oh.
Yeah. And so, or at least the New Zealand world.
Surprise, surprise, you have to save the world.
Yeah. A video game where you have to save the world. Tell me if you've heard of that before.
Right.
And so, like, from there, there's like, a little bit of Pokemon-style dialogue where, you know, a little bit awkward, a little bit silly, but... otherwise, it's forgettable, completely forgettable. The story dialogue, like when you go into the cutscenes and the narration from that, is interesting. And it does drive forward at a nice pace. So I was not bored at any time playing the game, by both the dialogue and the narration style. But I mean, you're not breaking any barriers with the dialogue in this game.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I can't expect much for a $12.99 game.
Yeah, well, exactly, right? Like, and so that's the thing, is that I went through, and multiple times in the game, I thought to myself, man, I really wish this was a bit deeper.
Uh-huh.
Because it does come off as a bit shallow at times. But for a $12.99 game, it is at least one-fifth as deep. As a $60 game.
Ah, as fair.
A $60 RPG.
At least you get what you paid for, so that's kind of nice.
Right, exactly. So I think you get more than what you paid for, but it's still, it's not a full price game.
Gotcha. Alright, cool. We've mentioned it a couple times, but I'm assuming the next one you want to talk about is Moonlighter.
Yeah, so the natural segue here is Moonlighter, which is double the price. And like I said, I believe I got Reverie on sale, because I think Moonlighter was the full price at $24.
Okay. Yeah, I know Moonlighter was more of a mainstream release in more places.
So the graphics and artistic style of Moonlighter is excellent.
Okay.
The gameplay is extremely unique. It's unlike, it's both like and unlike
any game I've ever played. Like the way that you play it is, should be very familiar, but the shop element is incredibly unique. And so
that's what I heard. The shop was like an interesting aspect that people did not think that they'd be into, but ended up getting sucked in.
Well, you kind of have to be in order to play the game properly. Like, right. Even if you hate the shop element, you have to spend a lot of time in the shop.
Okay.
So again, I won't give my spoilers because honestly, the story is pretty shallow.
You overall. Also have to save the world.
No, not really. Okay. So the idea is that you're in a town, okay, and in the town there are these things called gates, and those gates are like sealed off, and there are merchants and there are adventurers.
Okay.
And you are of like the merchant class, and adventurers are supposed to go into the gates and like defeat enemies and everything like that. Okay.
Right.
And so like, the merchants would just go into like the lesser gates and get a few items and whatnot, and then teleport out so they can sell them. So you are the son of the owner of the shop called Moonlighter.
Okay. I thought it was a sort of nod to the fact that you're moonlighting as an adventurer. Oh, okay.
No, it totally is. But the whole idea is that, like, as a merchant, in order to get goods for your shop, you have to go into the gates. That I mean, they're dungeons, really, but like the gates, and collect items at night because your shop is only open during the day.
Right.
So anyway, like. That's like the basis of the game, and the economy is entirely driven over you selling things, and it's simplistic but also incredibly deep, because every single unique item has like its own pricing structure that you are not given, like you have to figure out. And so like you set a price for something, and then a customer comes in, looks at it, and gives you like a rating. Okay. Like, is it good, is it bad, is it whatever? And then you kind of have to like haggle a little bit and to figure out what the right price is.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. And so, and there's like, and because it's open during the day, and the day progresses at, I mean, the game speed, it's pretty much a time limit. So if you're fucking around with prices all day and you're not able to sell things, you might not really make any money during the day, okay. Which really hurts you because you need potions and like equipment and stuff in order to do the dungeons. So it's really cool. I was kind of like what you said. I was just ultra surprised as to how much I enjoyed the shop. But probably the most unique part about it for me, and the thing that took me a bit to get over, is you have to be incredibly patient with this game.
Okay, why?
Because, like, you need to fulfill the quests of like gathering items to sell, and like you need to be able to sell stuff. Like you need to grind the gates that you've already done before in order to get items, and you need to get the right items, you know, and that will sell for more money.
Right.
So that you can upgrade your equipment. And this isn't just one of those things where you kind of get lucky and then you go back to your shop and you sell. No, it's like you keep your shop closed for a couple of days and like really grind for stuff. And then all of a sudden you have like a ton of inventory and you sell it all, and then you can move forward. So if you're the type of person that is like, okay, I succeeded at this, now I can move on to the next thing, this is not the game for you. Like, it takes, in my opinion, an incredible amount of patience to not only succeed, but succeed at both sides at the same time, both the shop side and the fighting side.
Okay.
Unlike Reverie, it punishes the shit out of you for not
for being lazy,
doing combat properly.
Yeah.
Like, so you have to really, I mean, it's like a get good game. Like, you have to memorize the attack pattern of all of the enemies in like all of the rooms. And there's, I mean, you have potions, but they're expensive, and so you don't really want to use them. And
the difficulty ramps up at times quite a bit, and it will punish you completely. And the idea is that you have this amulet on you that you can teleport out of the dungeon anytime. So you get like your bags full or something like that, you can teleport out, but it costs money. And so if you like to use the teleport feature. So if you entered the gate and you don't have enough money to teleport out, the only way that you can leave with anything is if you beat the gate.
Oh, crap.
And so, but if you die in the gate, you lose like, it's like 95% of everything in your bag.
Yeah.
And so like it really punishes you. And then that is on top of that in the second gate, the second level boss of the second gate is by far the hardest boss in the game. And I looked it up online, and it's just like, it is ridiculous how difficult that boss is compared to the difficulty of what everything you've experienced so far.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, I find the game overall to be kind of difficult, at least for my skill level.
the difficulty spiked from Reverie.
Yeah, it was like, it's one of those things, because like the economy is so sensitive and you're like really grinding and trying hard to get to these points, yeah. Like just being bulldozed by something incredibly difficult like that out of nowhere.
It's the American dream.
Yeah, exactly. So, and really the only thing that you can do in order to beat it is to grind up and be like kind of overpowered to go into that room.
Yeah, yeah.
And then go from there. And then like once you do that, like the rest of that gate is pretty easy actually.
Yeah, bad. Jeez.
But yeah, and so that's pretty much the base of the game. Unfortunately, it's also a really buggy.
Yeah, I've heard this actually.
There's one time I was almost done with a gate, and so the only way that you can move forward from a room is in most rooms anyway, is you have to defeat all the monsters in the room, and then the door opens, and you can go further.
Right, just like in a lot of the Zelda rooms.
Right, exactly. And so I was in like the second to last room in a gate, and the last monster in that second to last room, it bugged, so I couldn't hit it. And so I had a choice. I could either spend like half of my gold and leave,
right?
And just with the items that I had, I mean, or like, I mean, honestly, that was really my only option. Like, I mean, and
so you're not
instead
like
of
able...
beating the instead of beating the gate, I had to leave and not have everything that I could have gotten, and that was very frustrating. There's been a few times where I've like teleported out, and there's this like more expensive teleport where you can teleport out and then teleport back in the same place.
Okay.
And I've used that before, and it doesn't open up my teleport to go back.
I'm sorry.
Which is frustrating. I mean, it's just like, and there's a few times where like you open the shop, and it like doesn't let you do anything. You know, like people, like customers won't come in, and so like you just waste a day. Like it's not little things, it's like frustrating game breaking things.
Yep. So when you go into one of these dungeons, you're not able to actually walk back out the same way you came in. You have to, it's only teleportation.
So you can go back from room to room, but yeah, you can't just like go out the same way you came in.
Okay. Gotcha.
Actually, I'm glad you asked that question, because I don't know. I've never actually tried that, believe it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I know how much everyone hates backtracking, but like, if it means saving some bucks, maybe I wonder. I wonder if they have that as an option.
Wow. So, like, I actually might fire up my Switch after we get done here and see if that works.
Okay.
Because I swear to God, like, I've played plenty of hours in this. I'm in the third gate, I think, now, and there's five total, I think.
Okay.
And like I said, you really got to grind it. And yeah, I've never actually tried that. I don't know if that works or not.
Huh. I mean, I could see them totally like not letting you do that as an effort to emphasize the teleportation and the brutalness. But I could wonder if that is in there just to sort of like give you like, yeah, you could go back. It's just, you know, it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it definitely leads you in, at least the narrative kind of makes you believe that that does not work. It's like, oh, you get your, you know, your bag is full, you're about to die, whatever, like, blah, 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 use your amulet. Like,
right.
But I don't know. Other things that are worth mentioning is that is the crafting system is pretty cool. The weapons are different and unique.
I do love me a good crafting system.
So like there's like four or five different weapons, four or five different armor sets that you can get.
Nice.
And you obviously have to collect the materials to make them. And you upgrade them from there, and it's a pretty nice little thing. And there's shops that you can that open up in town, and you get to upgrade your own shop, and like you're kind of competing against other shops. It is a surprisingly deep game. It's just I really wish that the bugs weren't there, because I've definitely been frustrated by it, and actually I haven't played it in a couple weeks now because like I just kind of lost the will to live a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I heard that they are putting a major patch in because they're dropping like a downloadable content thing. And I'm hoping that the patch is like here to fix like current bugs and not bugs that were caused because they were making a DLC. So,
yeah.
Fingers crossed some of the stuff that was frustrating you is smoothed out.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Well,
so yeah, that's Moonlighter.
Well, I'm still kind of excited for it either way. It's also on Steam, but I just kind of feel like it seems like such a good Switch game that I might just wait until I get my own Switch and then get that along with some of the other like these like nice little RPG games to play. So I don't know.
I honestly feel like it would be, and I don't know if you were thinking about doing it this way, but like I feel like it would be a decent game to to stream, but to play on the mouse and keyboard.
Oh, okay.
I know you yourself enjoy controllers a bit more.
Oh yeah, when I was playing Undertale in the beginning, and I was doing the keyboard, and at a certain point I had to switch over to the controller, and it was night and day, as if when I was doing some of this stuff, where all of a sudden I was nailing some of these boss fights. I was like, oh my god, I could never have done this with the little, like, arrow keypad. I'm so glad I switched.
Yeah, and it might all just be preference, but, like, so, like, for Destiny, for example, like, I booted it up on the PlayStation the other day for the first time in forever, and I feel really bad because my PlayStation account and the PC account for Destiny, they're not linked, so, like,
I know.
I have all this progress and all this cool stuff from like early on in Destiny on my PlayStation, but then I have all like the new content on the PC. Well, so I fired up the PlayStation and did Destiny a little bit, and like doing the shooter stuff on with a PlayStation controller is so fucking terrible. Like I only lasted a little bit, and then I was just like, nope, I don't care if I don't get to see all this cool old stuff again. I'm going back to PC.
Interesting, because even on the PC, I if there's an option to do a controller, I will opt for it, even if I'm on the PC.
I think so. For me, it's all about like the tracking. So like, say with a shooter specifically. So right. Like, if you're firing in front of you, and then you need to turn around and like fire at something behind you. It is literally 50 times faster on the PC than on the PlayStation.
Well, I'm well aware of the speed and precision that a PC, like the mouse, can provide versus the controller. For me, it's the accessibility of all the buttons right where I want them to be, near my hands and my fingers, and I don't have to, like, stretch or do something weird or, like, accidentally hit like a C button instead of a Z or something stupid like this, and like it's all right there, and there's no way for me to like mess up and hit. Unfortunately, yes, the speed of my reticle takes a dive as a result of this, but I like to think that I can make up for it a little bit. It's just, yeah, I will always, I, there's the ceiling of my skill on a controller is going to be much lower than the ceiling that I could have potentially have if I were to just get over it and learn mouse and keyboard.
Right. Cool.
Right. Well,
but yeah, that's those are my Switch games, and then we a little bit about Destiny, but like, so it is really nice though. Like I want to kind of go full circle here. It is really nice and refreshing to not just have Destiny, and we're going to talk about WoW Classic here in a minute.
Nice.
And like your Activision games and your EA games, Anthem, which we railed on a little bit.
Oh Jesus.
And so like it's really refreshing to have these games that, yes, aren't perfect, but they're so unique, and they bring back and capitalize on old concepts that you either may have forgotten, depending on your age,
yep,
or may have never experienced. Because like if you've, for Moonlighter, like if you've never played a Zelda game, like you're really in for a treat, because it brings the modern polish to the Zelda model that,
yep,
that punishes you, you know, like it's not an easy game.
Well, it's nice to see like games take like, hey, that Zelda thing was really cool, why don't we mix it up a little bit and put a different sort of spin on it that could be a little bit more fun or just different. And it's nice to sort of feel that like fresh air of like, oh man, this is kind of similar to what I have before, which is easy for me to get into, but I really love that they're doing this different aspect with it that's like, you know, something new that I didn't think I would enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. So. All right, what's next?
All right, let's talk about Switch games that we're kind of excited for, Pat. We had E3 recently, so they had a whole lot of stuff coming out. I think that the best segue that I could do right now is that if Reverie and Moonlighter aren't really, you know, still, if they have their bugs or lumps or whatever, then an actual Zelda game is coming out soon, and that's Link's Awakening, the remake of Link's Awakening, which looks very similar to Reverie and Moonlighter. Like a more updated graphics of it. But I don't know. Have you seen any of the Link's Awakening kind of like gameplay look?
I have not. And I'll tell you that like...
Did you ever play the original?
No.
Ooh, okay.
So it's funny like that I enjoy the old school, like old school Zelda style.
Yeah.
Like Earthbound style and all that. But I played... a bit of a Zelda game on the GameCube, I think. I can't remember which one it was. And okay. I've played probably half of Breath of the Wild. And I understand I'm going to get a lot of hate mail for this, but like just like Skyrim...
That people would actually sit down and actually email us.
I don't know what it is, but Breath of the Wild just could not hold my attention. Like it did in spurts, and I stuck with it for a bit, but I 100% like kind of was trying to power through because I thought it was getting a little boring.
Yeah, you've got, there's a certain point to it that you've got to like try to fight yourself through it, and that's the part that makes it difficult with Breath of the Wild, because for me it was a momentum. I had to get to a point and momentum shift in order to get Breath of the Wild to actually be interesting for me. And I kind of got into that groove, then it started to feel a lot better.
And like when Breath of the Wild came out, wasn't that the same year that Horizon Zero Dawn came out and Breath of the Wild?
It's like the same month. It was the same. It was like, yeah. Like 3 weeks or a month later. Yeah.
Yeah, and everybody was going crazy about like, oh, if only Horizon Zero Dawn would have come out at a different time, it would have been viewed differently.
I mean,
no,
it came,
fucking
it,
way.
It
like,
came,
Horizon Zero Dawn is way better.
It came out. It came out several weeks earlier, which was good for Horizon Zero Dawn, because the biggest thing about what Link's Awakening ended up doing was annoyingly and nicely create all these like unrestrictions with its mechanics. So like you could climb. You had these like systems of like physics that you could do with in terms of knocking things around and flinging them around and magnetically charged, and like you could, and the game just sort of like, hey, if these two things interact, you could do this sort of combo with them, and we're gonna let you do that. You want to climb up that mountain, you can climb up that mountain so long as you got the stamina. Like, and that was the thing that was really interesting. Whereas Horizon Zero Dawn coming, if you played Horizon Zero Dawn first, there's no problem. But for me, I played Breath of the Wild first and then went to Horizon Zero Dawn, and I felt like, oh, this is fun, but I really wish I could just climb over this mountain. I don't even need to go all the way like Link does, all the way up top. I just want to move around this because I don't feel like going through this group of enemies. That was the difference. And it just felt awkward. It just felt like, oh, man, this is good, but now it feels old suddenly, like the genre has moved forward.
I'm actually kind of I'm really glad you brought this up.
Okay.
Because this actually brings up a really good point as to why I think I really didn't like Breath of the Wild and subsequently didn't really like Skyrim. Okay.
I mean, I didn't like Skyrim either. I'll be honest. I thought that was the worst game in the Zelda franchise. That's just me though. And that was made by the same guy who did Oracle of Ages and Seasons. I can't. All right, continue.
So my thing is that I love open world games. I really do. But I don't like true open world games. And what I mean by that is that I do kind of want my hand held to tell, like, not necessarily to tell me where to go, but at least like give me a direction of what to do.
Right.
And I feel that in both Breath of the Wild and in Skyrim, that you get through the opening sequence and it's like, this is the world, go figure it out.
Yeah, kill
and
Ganon.
There's always this like feeling in the back of your mind where it's like, okay, it's not just am I going the right way, it's is the reason why I am dying 100 times is because I really shouldn't be here for like another 15 hours of gameplay. And that is very frustrating to me, because then like you've walked for forever over to this place because the game is telling you you need to explore, but because it's letting you go anywhere and it really needs a progression system as well, it's like, nope, you just wasted the past 2 hours because you walked out all the way over here and you really shouldn't be here until you get such and such perk or item or whatever. And I ran into that in Breath of the Wild multiple times.
Oh yeah.
And in Skyrim, I mean, I don't even remember the names of the places in Skyrim, but like Skyrim is great until you get to the first town and then it's just like, all right, see you later. And then you're just like, what the fuck am I supposed to do now?
Yeah. So, first I want to clarify, when you said that you didn't like Breath of the Wild, and did you say Skyward Sword the first time?
No, I said Skyrim.
Okay, I want to change my
like
answer.
Like Elder Scrolls.
So Skyrim I have no beef with. It's Skyward Sword I have the beef with. I think Skyrim does it a little bit better in terms of not holding a hand, but like keeping a firm press against you in terms of letting you know that, hey, there's an option to do the main quest. It's over this way. We're not going to force you to do it, but if you want to do it, like, you know, click it as your active quest and go through this way. I think it does a little bit better than what Skyward Sword, or, oh my god, what Breath of the Wild does, which is basically kill Ganon, which I thought was epic that it said that, but it doesn't really go into any more detail. It's just sort of like, hey, you need to get these four like guardians, but we're not going to tell you much more than that. And I agree. I think that my ideal is to sort of have a balance between the two. I like the idea that I can go off the beaten path if I want to and do whatever I want to do. But I also like that I can jump back into the main quest at any time without feeling like I have to sift through menus to figure out where the next quest was supposed to be or to remind myself what I was supposed to do. That's important to me. I think Breath of the Wild, there was a point where like, and there were like, because the reason I recommended it to you was because I knew you and Ian like Minecraft. And not that these are similar in any way, but there is one similarity in the sense that Minecraft has no story or anything. It's you are making up your own goals. There is no railroad to put yourself on to follow a story. And it's one of the reasons actually why I really don't like Minecraft, because of the fact that I need, like, I'm not good at making my own goals for the sake of making goals. I like to make goals because I know that as I do these little, like, side quests or something in the game, it's all adding up to doing the main quest better. And so that's my incentive to do them. I don't really like Minecraft because of the fact that, like, you know, I don't have to do these things if I don't want to. And so I just don't. So when it came to Breath of the Wild, all of a sudden I found myself, like, facing that issue of, like, well, Zelda's not a level-up game. Like, the only thing you really do is you get better weapons or you get more hearts. But you're never going to increase your strength. You're never going to increase, like, your armor proficiency yourself. You got to find those things or whatever. And so I'm faced with this, like, giant, like, landscape thing. And I think, like, okay, well, I got to do something. What's over there? That looks interesting. You know what? There's a light coming out of that mountain. I'm going to go check that out. Maybe there's something there. And sure enough, there was, like, some crazy mystical deer that was there. And it was just sort of like, okay, so what I'm starting to figure out from this game is, like, I could point in a direction. I think that landmark looks cool. That's my goal. I'm going to go see what the top of that mountain is, or that landmark tree thing or something. And there's something there. That's not always, like, amazing somethings, but it's just something there. And once I, like, started to turn my head off, like, that switch on, it's not quite the Minecraft switch, but it's close to it, of, like, you know, I want to check this out today. Like, I just want to kind of investigate this, and that will be what I do today in Zelda, is I'm going to investigate this spot. And as I'm going around, I'm like, and I should probably pick up these little shrines, because it's nice to have teleportation pads if I ever need to get around a little quicker. And so that was how I kind of, like, fell into Breath of the Wild, and by the end of it, I was like, really actually getting into, like, more of the game, because once you start finding villages and stuff, then you could start doing more, like, there's more personality into the game. It's not just this wilderness. So when I recommended it to you, I was like, oh, you know, it's Minecraft, but you've got this weird Zelda stuff in there. It's this, like, you got to figure out your own goal, but always do Ganon and always kill Ganon if you want.
Well, so, and I guess there is some way that is possible for you to run straight from the starting area.
Oh yeah, I've seen some people do it. So, like, basically, you have to be decent enough at the game. Like, the combat is fine. Right. It's not, like, the most, like, smooth combat in my opinion, but it gets the job done. And if you're good at it, basically you bum rush to Ganon's castle, and there's all these strong enemies that have all these strong weapons and stuff. The moment you start taking one or two down, suddenly you're equipped to go the rest of the way. You don't have the hearts like you normally should, but you definitely have all this, like, armor and weapons and stuff, and you start collecting more of it. So by the time you actually get to Ganon's castle, you're at least able to put up a really good fight, so long as you know what you're doing. So
right.
Watching a speed run of it is actually really interesting, to see them kind of, like, make use of the environment, I guess, of, like, you know, I'm going to collect this, and this, and then I'm going to launch myself this way, and I'm going to throw this away, and I'm, like, done. And they're, like, it's just really cool to sort of watch somebody pick up and throw, and then discard broken items and stuff, so.
Mm-hmm.
That's Breath of the Wild. I don't know if you've been watching I put up through a Discord streaming thing. I don't know if you saw some of the gameplay of what Link's Awakening looks like, but I wanted to see if that interests you in terms of, like I always get persuaded based on, like, the artwork or, like, the actual way the game looks or whatever. So I was like, oh, I'll show you Link's Awakening.
This looks pretty dope because it reminds me of, like, the old school stuff.
It very much is. So, like, Link's Awakening is fundamentally, like to give a little bit different of, like, or a little history of Link's Awakening. It was made as, like, this weird little side project that they were doing in the office that had, like, no real, like, release plans or anything. They just kind of were doing it for funsies. And there's no there's actually no Zelda in it, despite being called Zelda, Legend of Zelda. There's no Triforce. There's no Ganon. It's, you play as Link. There's, I think, a girl named like Kieran or Karan or something. I forget how to pronounce her name. And instead of like the Triforce, there's like this wind fish you've got to like awaken. And you have to collect these instruments to sort of do it and play this like very nice orchestra like music piece for it. There's a lot of very similar like Zelda like esque things that you normally have. You get your keys, you get your cool weapons, you get to map your two items on your buttons or whatever like you normally can do in some of the older Zeldas. But like it just feels more whimsical and goofy. They even have like little Bow Wow, like the chain chomp or whatever monster from Mario in there as like a little nod to Mario. It's such a weird kind of a game and goofy. But it's very also it controls and feels like a Zelda game. So it came out I think on the Game Boy the first time. It's one of those things where like, okay, I like this because it's Zelda, but it doesn't because it feels like Zelda. But this is a different Zelda kind of a thing than I normally do, and I kind of dig the change a little bit. So I think that's another example of something on Switch. That I think you would enjoy, at least, because it's not going to be Breath of the Wild in terms of, I don't know where to go. It's going to be more of, like, Link to the Past or Oracle of Seasons or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love the upgrade in the art. It's like, this is a true, like, completely remastered, ground-up kind of looking thing, so. Yeah.
Nice. So... The thing that I wanted to say is that, like,
yeah. I talked a lot.
because you brought up Minecraft, I totally get the perspective, but so I feel like it's while it's the same style, it's two different things because while both really let you go and create your own experience and everything,
yeah.
The one game, Minecraft, is purely create your own. So like
It's all the way on the other spectrum side of it, like full right. on this is you have to create everything
right. And so like the idea is that there is no you're doing this out of order, you're in an area you really shouldn't be,
there's no such thing as you're playing Minecraft wrong.
Right, exactly. Whereas in any kind of story driven game like Zelda Breath of the Wild, no matter how much it wants it to be a open world, do whatever you want, make your own goals kind of thing, it's not. Right. Like you have to follow some kind of progression at some point. And unless you're super Gosu at the game and whatever, and you can skip all that stuff, but usually that would not be somebody who's just starting, you know, like it's somebody who's beat the game already.
Right.
Is yep. showing off. And so that's really my problem, and also why I feel like Horizon Zero Dawn resonated with me so much is because to me it is an open world game done correctly. Like it's you can go anywhere you want in this area, and it's impossible to do it wrong. Like you have these borders, these large borders, but these borders, and you cannot screw this up. Go and explore every nook and cranny. Do combat, skip combat, whatever you want to do, and then like, but we're gonna hold your hand and not allow you to kind of go further than this area until you're ready, you know?
Right.
And so, to me, it was just the perfect combination.
Well, I think what helps with Horizon Zero Dawn is I think the combat's a lot more crisp. Even though it relies a lot on range for what seems like there are a lot of times where I'm in melee range. Like the range combat is the thing. I just feel like the rolling, the moving, there's a lot more options to do in Horizon Zero Dawn that you don't need to be like some sort of mechanic manipulator to pull off. Like these are things that the game very much tells you, you unlock this like slide ability or something, or, this drop down kill, like execute ability, like very much it lets you know you have these things. Without having to say like, hey, here's some physics you can do, break them. But I will say that like
The ability of just like in Zelda to just unlock the whole world and being like, yes, like you could go somewhere that it per se deems you shouldn't go to, like Ganon's castle too early because there's a bunch of guardians there that will like eyeball laser you to death. But like, I would say that what's interesting is that like in terms of exploration, I felt like I, even with dangerous enemies, I felt like I had more, like if I wanted to go to the desert place, which I really wanted to do because those are always the climates for some reason that I want to go to, I was able to go to that, I beelined it to there after the first dungeon place because I was like, I think I want to visit this place first. Me being ready, damn that all to way. And like, I went there immediately and yeah, it was a little, there was moments where it was, I thought it was a little hard, but it wasn't too difficult. I just love the fact that it let me. I like for once I was like, there's not a sign that stops me and says like, hey, sorry, we're running a parade through here. You can't, so you're going to have to wait until the parade's over. And it's like 3 days later and they're still running this parade because you haven't completed XYZ over there. I just love the fact that it's like, you know, like, why don't I just go around the parade? Like, you know, I'm just, there's no parade in Zelda, but like, you know, those arbitrary, like, silly plot beats that they use as an excuse that you can't get through somewhere. It was just nice to like jump on the glider and literally skip an entire continent of stuff to go to where I wanted to go. And in Horizon, yeah, there are times where like the it just doesn't unlock something, but like you could almost brute force your way through something if you wanted to. My only issue with Horizon Zero Dawn was that there was like an extremely large amount of enemies everywhere I went. That it felt like as I ran, all of a sudden I bumped into like another like nest or another like pack of some robot dinosaurs that I'm like, God damn it, like are you guys everywhere? Like can I just have like a peace and quiet for like just one road trip down here? Can I just not have to deal with you guys? And it just felt like I was always running into them. Which like after a while I got really kind of like annoyed with because I was like, this is getting repetitive. I just don't want to deal with some of these monsters or these like dinosaurs. And I'm getting tired of stealthing slowly around this group just to avoid them. That's just me. I know, I think I'm actually probably in the minority camp there where people are like, no, I really loved engaging them. I'm like, you know what? That's fine. If you enjoyed that, that's fine. I'm just saying that like coming off from Breath of the Wild where I could just glider my way across and fight enemies if I felt like it or felt like, or skip them if I didn't feel like it, it just hurt a little bit in my like questing that I was like, oh, I just don't want to deal with this particular monster right now. Mm-hmm. But that's it. That's all I got on that one.
Cool.
I will say that the story was a lot better in Horizon.
Yeah. So, yeah, but I mean, getting back to my point, like, the idea for me is that I love open world games, and I love Minecraft a lot. Ian and I play a lot of Minecraft. Because Minecraft is the true open world game.
True. I would say it's the purest open world game you'll ever find.
Right. But I feel like Breath of the Wild is too much like Minecraft without the advantages of Minecraft because you go in the wrong direction, you know?
Yeah, true. Yeah, I guess I would kind of love to see a Zelda game that didn't rely on hearts. Like, basically, like, you know, this is the health you have and you can go wherever you want. But, like, you know, you just gotta be careful no matter which way you go. You just, you know, every direction is kind of an equal difficulty, but a different difficulty, like a little smarter gameplay, maybe. I think that would kind of help a little bit, where it's like, anywhere you can go, you can manage it. You just have to be smart about it. As opposed to, oh, you can bum rush Ganon, but you've gotta be, like, perfect at every control of the game. Not quite the same thing that I would love, but I would love to see something like that, because I think that would get closer to the balance that I think you would prefer in terms of, like, not getting, like, slammed down into the floor for walking into an area that has, like, a bunch of centaurs roaming around it.
Right. Cool.
Cool. All right, do you want to talk about Pokemon?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a whole lot to say. This is
me too. Me neither, but
about it. stupid Game Freak.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have one thing to talk about. And okay. And this is a very shallow opinion from a guy who's not a Pokey fanatic like Ian is.
Or me.
And yourself. So I feel like certain features are only a huge deal because they were there before.
Yes.
Like, I feel that, like, and the PlayStation had this problem with backwards compatibility.
Yep.
Like, backwards compatibility wouldn't have been a big deal if the PlayStation 2 didn't have it and the original PlayStation 3 also didn't have it. Like,
right,
so,
right.
So once they came out with later PlayStation 3s and then the PlayStation 4 that didn't have backwards compatibility, everybody was just in a huge uproar. And this is really the same concept with this Game Freak stuff. Like, the whole idea that they're not allowing imports into the new game and that it's the whole list overall is condensed and everything is, I mean, in my opinion, pretty ridiculous. But I only feel that way because all the other games allowed you to do that. And the reasons why they gave for it, at least in the community, doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, because I guess, like, the models in the new game really aren't that great or aren't that much better or something.
Right, yeah.
And so they were like, oh, you know, like, we need to concentrate on doing, like, high-quality models for, like, a limited set and all that. And it's just like, well, that would be great if these were actually that much better.
That's the thing. So, like, I think it's only a matter of time. I think people kind of blew it out of proportion a little bit. I know that they say, like, oh, we don't have any plans to put more of them in. But, like, that always translates to me, like, saying, like, you know, we just don't know. We just haven't gotten that far yet. Right now we're working on this game. We're not working on phase 2 or anything like that. We're just trying to get this part out. And after that, we'll worry about everything else. And so, like, because, like, the thing I always remember is, like, in Gen 3, they didn't have the national decks. It was just, here's whatever Pokemon that we put in the Pokedex for Generation 3, which was, like, Hoenn, Ruby, and Sapphire, that's what you get. And whatever other gens that happen to bleed in, so, like, Pikachu from Gen 1, or, like, I think they had a couple from Gen 2, but I can't remember, probably, like, Hoothoot or something for Knight. That was it. And, like, then, when they introduced the next Gen 3 games, it was Fire Red and Leaf Green, you could trade with Ruby and Sapphire, and that unlocked the national decks. And that gave you the ability to, in Gen 3, bring over, like, game Pokemon from the other games. And so, I'm just like, you know, that was just on Game Boy Advance, where you didn't have internet. You had to, like, link up with another game to get this to happen. It's so, like, who's to say that you can't do this with the Switch when you actually have internet access to do downloadable content stuff or patches and stuff. So I'm not too worried about that, and if anything, I'm kind of, like, okay with it, because I know myself pretty well. When I play a Pokemon game, I'm gonna be tempted to trade over a level 1 souped up Bagon or a level 1 souped up Larvitar just so that way it can be part of my team, because I like those Pokemon so much. So this forces me to, like, not... I mean, who knows? Watch, one of them will actually be part of the game. But, like, this forces me to actually have to use the progression system that they intend for the game. And that could be probably beneficial starting out, at least. But
I mean, I guess, but, like, I feel like everybody at this stage of the game, what generation of Pokemon game are we on now?
Oof, 9?
Yeah, something like that. Like, I feel at this stage of the game, you have many different generations of Pokemon players, and therefore you have many different angles of what people are trying to get out of Pokemon.
Right, yeah.
And I feel that any kind of limitation of that is really alienating people that don't really... You feel me?
You cut out there. Sorry. Say again. Alienated.
I said. Yeah, I said that like that. Any kind of limitation on that is alienating like a generation of people that don't need to be alienated.
Oh yeah.
Like if you want to load in stuff from another game, previous generation, whatever, and just like blow your way through the campaign or something like that, well, whatever. I mean, like if your goal is to be like a competitive Pokemon player and constantly be restarting and re-rolling to get the perfect IVs and stuff like that.
Yep, right here.
Then, I mean, like,
I absolutely that's not hate the way IVs. The game's
supposed to be played. Like, you can't.
Hey man, I can play. There's no wrong way to play Pokemon. I play to win.
Well, you say that, but Game Freak obviously doesn't think that's true because you're kind of limiting the ways.
I know, and I hate not to go on a rant here, but man, I hate IVs. I hate any hidden stat that you have to like go out of your way to like fight RNG to get. And like anyone who tries to convince me that RNG manipulation is cheating can go fuck themselves, because like it's our way of like trying to return balance back into this game, because the RNG is just bullshit sometimes, actually most of the time, and it's just dumb that they haven't come up with a better system for this. But the fact that they have a hidden stat that's RNG related to make things better than other ones, and that's just dumb. So that's my mini rant on IVs. But like, to talk about like features coming in and out, like I don't know if they mentioned like mega evolutions, and I don't know if they've mentioned like Z attacks, which were the things from the Gen 6 and Gen 7? No, Gen 8? Whatever one we want to call Sun and Moon, because it's a weird one. I think it's Gen 7, so maybe we're on Gen 8 right now with Sword and Shield. No words on that, but like part of me is like, you know what? I wouldn't mind not having them. Like, I enjoyed Mega Evolution. If they want to find a way to put that in there, fine. But like, I always and still saw Z attacks as like super gimmicky and super just cheesy and dumb. Like, it was a cool idea in theory for like, or maybe like really cool for like the story. But in terms of like battling and stuff, I just thought it was like a really cheap like gimmick that they threw in there because they wanted to try to recreate the same zeal they got from Mega Evolutions. And Mega Evolutions themselves were kind of like gimmicky, but at least there was a lot more like layers to them than what a Z move was. But like part, I guess like to bring this in, like why you bring up these, but like when it comes to like a feature being included or not, it's something where if it makes sense in the game, then by all means you should bring it in and implement it. But like if your game can function extremely well without it, then there's probably something about that feature that in and of itself isn't that thorough or deep that it didn't need to probably even be brought in the first place, and we could probably do without it in the beginning. But I know I'm probably gonna be the minority camp for that one. But I mean, to wrap it up all back in again, I'm not saying I don't want all the Pokemon in there. If anything, I think the real fucked up part is the fact that like Pokebank, which is like supposed to be the subscription in order for us to like move our Pokemon back and forth from games, and they said like it was going to be that kind of a storage system for all future Pokemon games. That's the thing that doesn't work. And I think that because of the fact that you have to like pay $5, it's only $5 a year. So it's not exactly like breaking the bank. Even for like a 7-year-old, it's not breaking a bank. But like the fact that like you have this service and it's not working, despite the fact that you said it would, that like out of principle, like come on. That like if you want to restrict the kind of Pokemon that comes in there because you just haven't made the sprites in line with this game, fine. I think it's a silly excuse, but like I get why, I can at least get why that would be the case. But like don't strip me of a service that you said was going to work for this kind of a thing. That kind of is the weirdest one I think I could have from this game.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Jeez. All right. Real quick, I didn't want to even talk about Fire Emblem Three Houses because I'm not actually that excited for it. But like, I just wanted to real quick run down like, this game looks weird. I don't like the premise of like, basically, Pat. I'm assuming you know nothing about Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Nope.
Perfect. So to give you the briefest synopsis. The game starts off with you guys, like, the main character, which is now a thing that Fire Emblem does now. You have an avatar again. And you're a teacher at a school for three houses. And you have to teach these, like, students the art of war and battle. Already, I have a problem with this premise. In the sense that I never liked the idea of an academy setting in terms of three opposing factions decide to go to the same place. Like, it doesn't really make sense logically that you would let your future, like, princes and princesses and stuff. Like, unless your plan is to do a political marriage, which doesn't seem like any of them are, it doesn't make sense to let them fraternize with each other, like this. And so, sure enough, it does a flash forward, and you're in war, all three are in wars with each other. And I'm like, well then, again, you just sort of proved my point that, like, the school was pointless as a plot point. Like, all you're doing is forcing drama later in, like, a really artificial way. And I'm just, like, ugh. It like, the whole thing just seems weird to me. Mm-hmm. So, and it's, like, I wanna like this, because I like a lot of the Fire Emblem games, but it just seems like this is going to be a big miss for me, and I'm probably going to end up skipping it, or I'll probably buy it when it's, like, super discounted, and that way there's no risk involved. But that's
so
my...
What platform is this game on?
It's going to be on the Switch.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's not a mobile game.
No. It's going to be the full... So, like, Heroes is the only one that's a mobile game, and that one's just basically, like, we took all the other Fire Emblems and threw them all into one place. Whereas Three Houses is the next generation one. Eventually, these characters will probably be thrown into Heroes as well. The gameplay looks fine. That's probably the best I could say. Is the gameplay looks like Fire Emblem. It's just the story around it looks dumb, and I'm just worried about how, like, cheesy and, like, artificial the drama is gonna be. So.
Gotcha.
So anyway, that's my Fire Emblem. I just want to give a quick take on that because I know a lot of fans are excited for it, and I'm probably one of the few that's just sitting here like, guys, this is looking bad. Anyway, do you want to talk about WoW Classic as our last final piece?
Yeah, so I am excited about WoW Classic coming out in a few months.
Yeah, what's the date for that one? Is it
August
27th? Yeah, I think you're right. Okay. I think August 12th, you can, like, kind of, I don't know if reserve's the right word, but, like, create up to three characters for it, and that way you can, like, jump right in instead of waiting through servers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the 12th. Don't quote me on that. That sounds right.
And it's free, essentially, like, if you already own WoW.
Yeah, it's included with your subscription. I think that's the best part I've heard of the news so far.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Cool. So I'm excited about reliving glory days. I understand that it's probably going to be rose tinted glasses, but
oh yeah,
it's one of those things where I want to see a AAA game that goes back and has modern polish, but challenges you in the way that you remember when you were.
Yeah. So I've played,
because it's a common narrative nowadays that, like, oh, all these games are getting so easy, you know.
Yeah, yeah. They handhold you, but not in a way to push you through the story, but in a way of, like, well, let me do that for you, kiddo.
Mega Man.
Yeah.
And so, I'm really looking forward to that, and I am optimistic that I'm gonna play it. And I'm going to enjoy the frustration.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to enjoy having to, if I play like a warrior by myself, like essentially having it be a requirement that I do first aid, and that after every single mob of two enemies, I have to use a bandage, and that if there's any more than two enemies, that I just die. Like, you know, there's no in between.
Wasn't there like a story of a guy who was like, I'll go healer for this raid, and like he just literally zipped around like healing people with first aid right. as a warrior or whatever.
Yeah, I could totally see that. And so like I'm a little worried about gear. I'm a little worried about balance.
Yep.
And how they're gonna do that.
It sounds like they're being very, very true to what it was like on the last patch for vanilla. Like they're being, so whatever the gear was then, you're gonna expect basically the same stuff.
So I haven't read anything about this, so maybe they've already said and I just don't know. But like the other thing I'm worried about is the progression.
It's going to be exactly the same, I can assure you.
Well, no. So, like, the whole point of WoW at every stage of WoW has been moving forward. Like, you get the next thing, you get the gear, you get something unlocked, something opens, you beat this raid, whatever. Okay. So, is this really like just turning into a bad precedent where they're essentially re-releasing an old game with modern shine, obviously, but are they just going to continue at the same pace? So in a couple of years, we're going to be at Wrath in Classic WoW?
Tempt me. Don't tease me.
Well, but see, that's the thing. And so that means that, like, then once we get to, I don't know.
Like, Battle for Azeroth?
Let's say that that Classic WoW gets the Battle for Azeroth, and then they release Classic WoW.
Yeah. So here's my hope. Here's my hope eventually, and I like kind of wish they did this already, but like my hope is that they do this thing where like in Classic WoW you have an opportunity and you're like, hey, you guys want, you can take one of your characters from Classic WoW and you can move them into the regular WoW and continue on with that character if you want. But you know the consequences for doing such a thing. You can't just bring them back. And my hope is that they do this thing where like they have segmented WoW, where it's like, here is vanilla WoW that was like what vanilla was back then. We didn't tweak anything. You play this part of WoW like vanilla. And then when Burning Crusade comes out, they're like, hey, you've progressed through vanilla. Here's the next stage. We haven't touched anything. It's Burning Crusade. And then when Wrath comes out, same thing. And like the idea is that the expansion packs no longer suffer from what the next expansion pack does to them. Because I'm still like really bitter at how horrible Legion is now, thanks to what Battle of Azeroth has done to like the artifact system and everything. And, like, it just feels like you just took, like, basically, hey, congrats, you made it to Legion according to your level. You don't get your artifact weapon. We got rid of it. And, like, that's 90% of what Legion was. Like, you ripped the heart right out from this, like, expansion. And you didn't even think that there would be a problem. And so, like, I would love that they segment this. Because I'm sure other expansions have suffered something similar. Maybe not to the same, like, you could put your finger right onto one thing and say like you fucked up at this part right here. But I'm sure there's things in like Wrath that like little pieces like Death by a Thousand Cuts kind of a thing that suffered because of whatever Cataclysm ended up doing, and Cataclysm with whatever, like when Pinsta Pandaria came out, despite the fact that I actually really like that expansion, the homogenization of the classes was not a highlight of that expansion. And so, like, I'm sure there's moments where you're like, you know, you kind of, like, made my class not the same what it was before, and now I can't do what I used to be able to do at this particular part, at a point. Like, it almost, like, further encourages you to not experience the game. You just keep queuing up for dungeons instead. So, that's my hope, that each time they segment it and you could progress, you could push a character through each part and experience that expansion pack the way it was originally made until you get to the current spot. That's where WoW is. And so, like, because it feels like they always make these expansions from the ground up in terms of, like, we decide to change this sort of a thing, and the expansion builds upon that. And then, but the problem is they also, like, that change affects the old expansion. So, I just hope that they do it like this, so that way, like, you almost, like, phase through WoWs or whatever. That way you can, you know, feel like you experienced it correctly.
The whole point of Classic WoW is to make it so that they can't have those private servers.
Right.
And so
yeah, it's ultimately to kill off like Vengeance or whatever that other one was that was
right. And so in that same spirit, kind of playing off of your idea, like I would really like it if I'd really like it if they would do the same thing. So it's like it's not just that you can move to like normal WoW or anything like that. It's that, hey, we're starting another server.
Yeah.
In Classic WoW for
Burning Crusade or something. Yeah.
And so, and it's not just that like you can move characters or anything like that. It's just like, do you want the vanilla experience? Come here. If you want the Burning Crusade experience, come here.
Yep.
And it's all within like the one product. And I mean, I don't know. Like you would think that they would just continue to release expansions because Jesus, like Mists of Pandaria was forever ago.
I know. Oh man. I loved like there's a lot of things I love. Like that's when I came back into WoW was the tail end of Mists of Pandaria, like the last couple of months. And there are some things in that like now I'm too like the way the level progression goes, it's just too quick for me to enjoy the whole place without feeling like, oh, I'm not doing this to level up anymore. I'm just doing this for the story, which it's too spread out of a story. Like there's no, like they, like it's, God, it's weird to say this, but they need like the Old Republic treatment where like they say, here's the purple quests that are the main line. And if you want to do these really silly gimme quests, you can, they're over there. But like, if you want to focus on the main ones, just follow this. So that way it like kind of counteracts how quickly you get these experience points nowadays. Mm-hmm. So something like that would be nice. But like I would love to see them just keep doing more server classic things. And yeah, you could like start your character off at tail one for these servers and just kind of move up. Or you could, I would love the option of like, hey, you know, this character I have is kind of done with Vanilla WoW. Like I'm ready for this one to move on to, I would like to transfer it to the Burning Crusade server now and start and see the late game, but with this character that I've grown attached to. I was just looking at both options. And I think that for Blizzard, it's kind of like a win-win in terms of just like forever keeping people on the subscription with like content that like, you already made. Like it's like the only issue is now is like giving the server devotion and making sure it's not bucky as hell.
Right. Exactly.
So yeah, that's I guess WoW Classic. What are you feeling what are you feeling in terms of rolling a character?
Well, my first and my main character was a paladin, and I'm tempted to do that again. And I feel like the reason why I did that back in the day is because, like, in such a brutal atmosphere, you like a paladin was really the only character that could do damage and heal.
Yep.
You could be a priest if you wanted to, but it was like impossible to play the game single as a priest.
Yeah, you really relied on others.
Yeah, I mean it's a little bit of an exaggeration, but like. But it was very frustrating experience comparatively. So I don't know. The other thing, I really enjoy Warriors. Like I enjoyed Warriors in old school WoW too. So I might do that too. And obviously my character in new WoW is a warrior I don't really play WoW much anymore, but like that I was playing the crap out of was a warrior. So. So yeah,
you could join
be a warrior, I think.
You could join me and Ben as we were like kind of jokingly, but maybe we do this because that's, you know, this is how you start these things, is a joke. But like we were thinking about doing all undead and doing Warriors as them all. And you could you could be part of our metal band.
No, well, so the idea, whether we're undead or what, if we're all warriors, then we would create a clan called Of the Bad.
Yes. Oh, you're right. Finally. Yeah. It took a game where most of place isn't on there, but there's our Warriors of the Bad.
Yeah, that would be great. We should totally do that.
Yeah, because I've been tossing them back and forth between classes and stuff, and races, and I haven't 100% committed to one or the other, but the Undead Warriors one doesn't sound too bad right now.
Yeah, and then away from, if we're going to do Horde, like, away from you guys, I'll probably do...
Your Human Paladin.
Well, I don't know, like, Human something. I really feel like the human storyline in Vanilla WoW is really, really strong. I always felt that the Night Elf one was okay, it's just that over in Kalimdor is kind of a weird progression for Alliance.
I agree with that. I agree with the progression, at least.
and then the Dwarf campaign is kind of, in my opinion, was kind of boring compared to the Human one. But
so, like, I think Human might be the one on my, like, lowest tier, because if I have to fucking go through Goldshire again, I'm going to blow my brains out. Because I remember that in, like, Vanilla WoW, before I went back into Mr. Pandaria, I did Vanilla WoW. Burning Crusade had just come out, so it felt like vanilla to me and probably to most people, but now you had the shiny new two races and jewel crafting. I just remember being bored to tears with, like, the story in Goldshire, around Goldshire. Like, I know, like, Westfall, like, the Defias gang, that was when things finally started heating up. But, like, God, I hated, and I still, like, get flashbacks when I attempt to start, like, a human, just to sort of, like, say, I have a human character or whatever. I get, like, these, like, PTSD moments of just how much boring it was in the beginning, with, like, inane, like, farmer quests and, like, horrible, like, kobold things and stuff. And I was just like, oh my god, these don't matter. This just doesn't matter. And I'm not getting enough experience points to make me feel like I should be doing this. And then that's when I ended up doing, like, the warrior quest, specifically, and, like, running to Firelands at, like, level 12. Because I was like, it's better this way.
Well, yeah, and that's the other thing, is that, like, you didn't have any mounts, and then you had those, like, those class quests, and there was, like, one or two where you had to, like, run across the entire continent in order to do.
Yep. And the flight system wasn't as great either. You had, like, they weren't as connected, so you had to, like, you would fly to, like, one spot, and then you'd have to hoof it to the next flight path in order to get to the next flight stuff. But, man, yeah, that was a trip. Oh,
nice.
Yeah, I'm excited, though. I kind of want to do, like, what we did for Battle for Azeroth, and hopefully get, like, you, me, Ben, and Taylor, possibly Neve, depending on if she's into this, and do something similar in terms of the launch day kind of, like, stream or something, and see how exciting we can make it. But we'll see. We'll have to, when the date gets closer, we'll start probably planning out more things and having more decisions made and stuff.
Yep, that sounds great.
Anything else you want to talk about video game wise? I feel like I've talked a lot, so I'm perfectly fine with letting you talk.
No, I don't think so. I think that's about it.
All right, sweet. Well, Pat, thank you so much for doing this tonight, and kind of, you know, being here instead of Ian. I think we got a pretty good amount of stuff, so... I'll do the anime one with Ian one of these dates. It's going to be the end of the spring season officially, so somewhere's in there. But then, for all I know, we might do a regular podcast before that one with you and Ian, and talk more probably fantasy stuff, since that seems to be heating up lately for us. So, all right, cool deal. All right, any last words, Patrick? Recommendations, things to... celebrate?
I don't know. I don't think so. Like I actually do have one more thing.
Okay.
So we've talked a lot about video games. I don't know how much of E3 you got to watch, but what was your most exciting thing from E3?
The most exciting thing. So in terms of gameplay, it was Pokemon Sword and Shield. Like, I had doubts about, like, is this going to be another Pokemon game that kind of has this drop down kind of feel? But I was also, while we were talking about it, playing a little bit of the gameplay for that in the screen share. And I think that sold me on it. Like, I saw it and I was like, man, this is exactly what I was hoping a mainline console Pokemon game would be, but with the ability for me to catch, like, whatever I want, unlike the Stadium or Coliseum games. But, like, it's weird because, like, if they showed gameplay of it, like, of Cyberpunk, I'd be super psyched about that because I thought the trailer was awesome and I can't wait to hear the story for that. It's the same guys who did The Witcher 3, and I would love to see what they do with this, a future game, a sci-fi game. And I thought the Cyberpunk, like, trailer was super, super slick and cool and just dope. And I want to see more of, like, okay, well, how do I interact in this world now? So I want to be excited about that, but I don't really have anything to be excited for. So my default answer is Pokemon, since I got to see the most of that. What about you?
So I was going to say the Keanu Reeves stuff.
That's Cyberpunk.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, like, I'm just, like, kind of like what you said. Like, I'm just, I don't know even know if I'm going to get the game. It's just, it was kind of an exciting moment.
Yeah, I hope we get more Keanu Reeves.
the thing that really excited me the most, though, is that is something that came as a complete surprise out of nowhere and has really fired people up, Microsoft announced that they're making a new Microsoft Flight Simulator.
Oh, really? I did not hear that.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw that. So Microsoft Flight Simulator is like, it was the original flight simulator, really.
Yeah.
Back in the day. And it's been pretty much a dead project for Microsoft for a long time. And they, like I said, complete surprise out of nowhere, they released a trailer for the new one. And they're coming out with a new one, and it really does look amazing. It, like, at least from the trailer, it looks like it blows everything else out of the water.
Dude, sweet.
And so some of the interviews and stuff with the developers that they did are pretty promising too. And it's one of those games, at least what they're describing it as, is it's like they said that they want anybody who's interested in flight, like in any aspect of flight, they want the game to be for them. So, like, whether it's a really hardcore person who wants all the realism in the world, somebody who, like, has just a controller or a mouse and a keyboard, like, they want them to be able to get in and do stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it sounds right up your alley.
Yep.
Dude, nice.
But yeah, you should check out the trailer. Like, it's a really beautiful trailer.
Yeah, I'll have to. It feels like a nostalgia thing hearing, like, Microsoft and Flight Simulators, so.
Yep.
Felt like every friend who, like every friend's house I went to who happened to be, like, a little bit with a computer had a flight simulator stick and everything.
Yeah, it was like one of the coolest things to do back in the 90s, like early 90s and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right. Well, I don't have anything because most of this stuff has already been talked about. So I'm ready to close out if you're ready to close out.
Yeah, I'm good.
It's getting late. So. All right, so as usual, we've got a whole plethora of ways to contact the show or talk to the show or do whatever you want. The first and foremost is we have a Twitter. It's at LOMG Podcast. That's not the LOMG. It's just LOMG. Or you know what? If you just looked up, like, League of Mediocre Gentlemen on Twitter, I'm sure we'll be the first ones popping in there. there's also an email. It's leagueofmediocregentlemen@otnmedia.org. You know what? I already got this one mixed up. It's leagueofmediocregentlemen@otnmedia.org. It is @theLOMGpodcast for Twitter. Oh man, I made this as confusing as possible. That's my mistake. There will also be a link in the Discord, or a link in the description for the Discord of OTN Media's like plethora of things to hang out with in terms of esports, or if you're ever looking for matches in Overwatch or Dota or League, if you're so inclined. There are Twitch streams on Tuesdays and Thursday at 8 p.m. Monday is the Level Up podcast with John and Joey, and we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/OTN. So, if there's anything you guys want to say, critique, mention, write in, we will try to answer them and have fun with it. So, feel free to ask away. Just keep it PG-13-ish. Alright, so that's it from everyone here at League of Mediocre Gentlemen. I want to thank you guys for listening, and stay at least mediocre.